delivery of a ready-made complete shiur. I would say that tonight I am going to experiment with agoge, with the interpretation of agoge. We have developed a magnificent methodology as far as halacha is concerned, the interpretation and understanding of halacha. Our conceptualization of halachic texts is second to none. It's a magnificent methodology. Our abstractions, inferences, definitions, classifications in the area of halacha are not inferior, certainly not inferior, but I believe they are superior to the finest of modern philosophical analysis. Yet, as far as our God is concerned, we have not developed, we have not succeeded, or we have neglected to develop a definitive approach, methodological approach to its text. We simply have not succeeded to interpret our God to the same manner and at the same level of conceptualization the way we do it in the area of Allah. What I want to try tonight is simply to apply, let me use this term, even though I don't like to use it, the Briska method to agadic text. I might be completely mistaken, completely wrong. However, I want to try. So either then I'll expect for your judgment, for your verdict, whether I succeeded or I failed with it. I selected 18 lines of Agade in the tractate Sanhedrin, which at first glance appeared to be enigmatic, ugly. Now let's take a look. Do you have a text? No, no, I have this. Okay. You have the text, but without the text it would be almost impossible. The Gemara before speaks about the problem of Kshorei. Which approach is preferable? The straight approach of the law or arbitration? We have a controversy among our rabbis whether it is incumbent upon the Dayan to insist upon arbitration, or on the contrary, arbitration which rests upon compromise should not be supported by the Dayan. The Dayan should offer just straight dinatera. And suddenly, the Gemara quotes Apostle Peter Mayim Reishis more than before, but suddenly, in the middle of the discussion about Kshore and Din, or at the conclusion of the debate about Kshore and Din, the Gemara changes the topic and begins to tell us a very strange story. Ahuda v'tom aviyodu tuviyah v'shom aviyodish chalfu b'shtei meyach Omar ishmur lahavyu de proxif Peter Mayim reishis modeh Peter Mayer in Reishis Mori. I was a person who used to walk around and say, what did he say? Whoever is capable of taking abuse without responding will be protected against any evil. Vicious mother. There was a person who used to walk around and say, what did he say? Whoever is capable of taking abuse without responding will be protected against any evil, against 100 evils which will befall him. Omar Shmuel Rav Yehuda quotes it. I mean, this saying, this adage, it's a folk saying. It can be traced to the verse in the Bible. Peter Mayim Reish Ismode, Reish Meir Dine. Whoever lets the water of strife and feud spread, is responsible for the beginning of a feud, of a serious feud, of 100 evils. This is Ahuda Vitoma. Ahuda Vitoma. Someone else there was a man again who used to say Atake plant gandali miktu. A thief, don't be surprised if a thief goes unhanged for 2 or 3 thefts. He will be caught in the end. Again, it's an adage, it's a metaphor, it's a folk saying, but apparently Shmuel was interested in that. And again Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, this is alluded to in the verse. Kroksif, Keyama Adeshem, Roshlesha Pishi Yisroi, Vala Abor Leo Shivena. Right, fine, it's the second. Then there is a third. Ahu Dave Koroma, Riozu, Shev Birei Lishalmono, Vechodel Abid Bish. Omar Shmuel Rav Yehuda Kroksiv, Kesheva Yipil Tzadik Vekom. Another used to say, 7 pits lie open for the good man, but apparently he escapes. For the evildoer, there is only one, into which of course he falls. This said something Shmuel to Rav Yehuda is alluded in the verse. The righteous man falls 7 times and rises up again. So how many do you have? 3, huh? Yeah, now the 4th one, the 5th one, the 6th one. Yet another used to say, Ahuda Vikoma Vozu, Vozu Mi Begine, Shoko Guime, Lizma, Zena, Vilezu Buche, Omer Shmuel Rav Yehuda Kroksi, Vigam Koloma Zeh, Omekemi Yomi Bishore. Yet another used to say, Rechim, who comes from the court, that is taken away from him, his cloak, sing his song and go his way. And he should be happy, in spite of the fact that he lost the case. This is alluded in the verse, that's what Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, and all Shmuel Rav Yehuda Kroksi, Gam Kolo Oma Zeh Al Mekime Yom Vishor. And all these people, also including apparently the losers, shall come to their place in peace. Apparently both, the winners as well as the losers. So how many do you have? 4.
tomorrow. There was yet another person who used to say, when a woman slumbers, the working basket drops off her head. When she falls asleep, of course, the basket drops off her head. Again, Avita Kamba Bozl, he naive with the Kula Shokin, Omer Shmuel Rav Yudit Roksiv, Batotayim Yimacham Kore. It's again, the saying can be traced to verse. By slothfulness, the rafters sink in. If one is careless, so the, I mean, when there is a little leak shows up in the ceiling, so he will finally lose the house. The whole house will fall apart. And then again, another man used to say, Ahud, if they had a coma, they also, somebody used to walk around and say, Gavre, the chitz the alley, Ariel Ligzize. The person on whom I relied shook his fist at me. Omer Shmuel Rav Yudek Kroksiv, it again can be traced to a verse. Gam Yishleim Asher Batachti Bei. This alluded in the verse, my known familiar friend, in whom I trusted and who did eat of my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. I mean, we have many psukim like that. Or I gave a shift of Odom, or I gave a shift of Adil Hashem Yiftachi. But he chose the posit from Turin. Ganish Lemesh Betachti Bey. Ahu again, the same story. Ahu Darek Omar, again, somebody used to walk around in Ardoe and kept on saying, repeating. Kirchintin Avi Azize, Hapusio de Safsire Shriva. When love was strong, we could have made our bed on the blade of a sword. Hashtag Avi Azize Rechintin, now that love is weakened. Puye Barshitinger Middle Sarima. Is a large bed of 60 cubits large, white, is not good enough. Omar Avune, this is not Rav Yudah or Shmuel Rav Yudah, Rav Avune, Kroksi. This saying, this metaphor, can also be traced to a verse in the Bible. Mi koreksi v'neaditi lo chashom v'debarti doch mala porefet. I have an appointment with you, and I will meet you from the top of the breches, of the cover, the tanya orange t-shirt, the kapere stefach, arikana soro, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu entered into the Kodesh Kodeshim, and Kaviyoko contracted himself that the kaperes be capable to accommodate the Almighty. And then, when the people sinned, well, the safe ksiv, Keyomar Adeshem Ashomayim Kisi, Loret Adem Ragloi, the heavens are my throne, and the earth is my footstool, Eze Bais Ashatinali, I don't need sanctuaries. No sanctuary can contain me. Because a finite sanctuary cannot accommodate the infinite. This is what we call the Sugya. It consists of 18 lines. You can count. I might have made a mistake. But 18 lines. Who are you happy? Are you happy with this Sugya? does it need interpretation or not? What problems need interpretation? First of all, before we try to interpret this sugya, I would like to know whether you are aroused by it, that you are perturbed, or it is a simple sugya which you can digest without any attempt to interpret it. What? What is the problem here? What is the problem? The whole sugya is one big puzzle. I'll tell you what bothers me. My questions are actually not unfounded. Who I would ask one question now? Who gathered a recollection of Baba? A certain person walked around and he said, Who were those persons who coined and circulated adages? Oh, this is folk. Folk wisdom. Who are they? The sugya tells us there was a man who used to say. Again, there was a man who used to say something else. Apparently, there were plain people. Simple individuals. I may say illiterate. Ignorant people who lived and died in anonymity. That's what I would say. Have those people been scholars? Have they been scholars, members of the teaching scholastic community? Pumpadise, Suge, and so forth. The Suge would have reported the wise metaphors in a different manner. So you would have said, Rabo Yemer, or Magnise Tobe be Pume de Shmuel, or Magnise Tobe be Pume de Rebbe. The strange manner in which the Gemara quotes those adages bears a witness that we don't deal here with scholarly wisdom defined and formulated by the Chachmei HaMaaseh in scholastic categories and terms, but we deal with what I said, with folk wisdom, which did not originate in this Midrash. But had those adages, metaphors, being originated in the academy halls, the Gemara would have said like that. Mizrko Shmuel, Teachot Mechavraya, and so forth. Those adages were not defined and formulated by the Chachma Masere. It is wisdom which did not originate in this Midrash, but at the market square. Its authors were, as I said above, nameless, unknown, who left the scholarly world and the halachic category. They couldn't trace this particular saying to a verse in the Bible because they didn't know the Bible. I believe you agree with me. The whole presentation by the Gemara bears a witness to that. No, if this be the case, so a question arises, namely, what question? What question? I can't recall my stomach, I can't hear. What do you say? I would say, yes, this is correct, number one. Number two, why was Shmuel and Ravune anxious? Well, Shmuel and Ravune anxious to trace it to the Bible. Why did the Gemara make an effort to associate each saying with a verse in the Torah? why must folk wisdom be raised to Torah wisdom? The people who precipitated the authors of the of those sayings or metaphors did not belong, as I said before, to the teaching Masorah community. Why was it necessary to put a stamp of approval on prima facie non-Torah metaphors and adages? So what's the answer? I would invite a comment from the floor. What is the answer? I beg your pardon?
An experience is
true. It's also found in itself. I would like to change it around a bit. I mean, what you have in mind is correct. But just to start from the other end. In order to explain it, I mean, just to illustrate that, I'll use Maima Chazal in Nida. It is just as an illustration, nothing else. Second, there is another question, and if it's important to trace, I mean, those sayings, those, this kind of wisdom to biblical sources, so why did the Gemara interrupt the debate or the sugya pertaining to Pshore and told us about those people who walked around and circulated certain metaphors, aphorisms, and about Shmuel, who every metaphor, every adage found in the Bible. What it's got to do with Pshore, with the problem of arbitration and din teira. Of course, your answer is the link is the pasuk Peter Mayim Reishis Modern, which is used before, introduced before by the Gemara with regard to the art of Pshore. Then the Gemara says that before the Yonim know the outcome of the Tere, so they may offer arbitration. Peter Mayim et Reishis Modern. What I believe is the Gemara has integrated 19 lines dealing with people who coined certain wise statements, and Shmuel found those statements in the Torah, in the Bible, not only because of the Pasuk Peter Mayim Reishis Modern, it's not the link. There is an ideological or substantive, or I would say philosophical link between the problem of Pshore and Din, and those 19, those 6 or 7 adages. And also, I mean, between the problem of Pshore and Samuel's effort to find every adage in the Bible. We all know, I don't have the Gemara here, but we all know, it's very popular, Maima Chazal. The Mamar of Rabbi Shimori pertaining to the embryo or the fetus during the period of incubation in the womb of the mother. You all know that, I assume. Rabbi Shimori portrays the fetus in the following manner. The fetus, the unborn baby, is taught by an angel every aspect, about every aspect of our Torah and actually of the cosmos, of the universe. A tangled burns of the head of the unborn child whose gaze penetrates the whole universe. and who knows every secret in nature and our Torah as well. This is a portrayal more or less. It's not a literal portrayal, but it's the portrayal, the digest of the Maamar of Rabbi Shimon. What happens? So you could close all yeshivas. Because if the fetus is a scholar par excellence, so he does not have to hear miserable shiurim from Arab Soloveitchik. Yeah, but a miracle happens. And because of that miracle, the yeshivas make a living. At the time of birth, the angel, the teacher, strikes the baby on its face and makes it forget everything it had learned before. Of course, the question is obvious. I don't believe I have to tell you about the question. Why did the angel teach the unborn babies, since the latter is not permitted to take along any knowledge it achieved during the time of incubation? Why teach if memory is prevented from retaining the knowledge which is being taught? I believe the answer lies... everybody knows the answer, but I just want to refer to something. The answer can be found in a parsha in Nitzavim, what we call parsha Sakshuva. You have your... Tada! Mitzvah Zeus, Rosh Reich in the Tzachra Yem, Lo Nifreis, Yinimcho, Velo Rechei Kohi. For this commandment, the Mitzvah is in this Torah. It's called Mitzvah. It's not too hard for thee, neither is it too far from thee. Lo Yashamayim, he lay there. מיהו לנו השמיימו ויקחה לנו וישמיין וישמיין ועיסה ונעשה ראינו איזה לימי ראינו מיהו לנו לא איזה לים ויקחה לנו וישמיין ועיסה ונעשה נפנה. And the last passage is כי קורא זה רכו הדובו מי בפיחו ובלבבו לעשי סי. So what did Moshe tell the people? That he's going to teach, that he taught them not a tere, an extraneous tere. That he did not impose upon them something foreign. Something which is very far from their nature and above their ability and capability to observe. He taught them and he's teaching them a Torah which is a part of the people. It is very close. The Torah can be found in the world's heart. If we would be wise enough and knew how to examine the heart. The Torah is right in there and their form. The Torah is a part of the Jew. The Jewish, his spiritual personality is permeated by Torah. So when a Jew studies Torah, he doesn't study anything foreign. It's not a foreign language, it's foreign. But he studies something which has been in him all the time. He uncovers a treasure, but not in the desert, not a treasure outside of him, hidden in the sand of the desert. But the treasure which was hidden in the secret, in the recesses of his spiritual personality. So that's why the Jew has to start studying Torah. It means to study, means to reconvert. What does study mean? The conversion of latent knowledge into actual knowledge. Study means to shift the personality from the dark periphery to the illuminated center. Study means to awaken the memory, to stimulate it. And finally, when the Jew, closes the Gemara happily, because he understood that Gemara well, so going home from the Smedrash, he begins to think, this is not new, I knew it. I have known it all the time. I remember it. And that's exactly why the reason for Rabbi Shimon's portrayal. In order to integrate the Torah, to implement, to assimilate the Torah into the Jew prior to his death. Conclusion for Rav Simoes Maimer is the following. Every Jew has a share in the Torah. The scholar as well, the scholar certainly, because he actually achieved the goal by converting latent knowledge into actual knowledge, into living knowledge, into real knowledge. But also the plain person, the simple tone, who did not have the opportunity, or the opportunity was not offered to him, to study under great teachers, to uncover the truth, was also a share. Because potentially, the Torah can be discovered in the deep recesses of his personality. So that a single Jew has not a share in the Torah. Some of the community of the Masorah are scholars in their own right. Others are endowed with intuitive Torah wisdom. Quite often, the messenger of God's word is an uneducated Jew, chosen by the Almighty to be the one to carry a Torah message, notwithstanding the fact that the messenger himself does not understand the substance of the message. In a word, folk wisdom is quite often traced to the Torah, for the Jew possesses inspired intuition and sometimes basic tenets were implanted in him, in his personality. And those tenets he expresses unconsciously, unintentionally, in the form of adages and folk wisdom. There was a man without station in the community who used to say, again, there was a man who used to say, again, another used to say, yet another used to say, oh, this they circulated edicts. But those edicts have been left traced by Shmuel, by the great giant of Torah knowledge and scholarship, traced to the Torah. The edict contains an halachic principle. You ask me what is the link between the problem of arbitration, pshore, and folk edges of folk wisdom, which Shmuel made an effort to raise them to the level of Torah wisdom. To raise them to the level of Masero, of something which should be passed on from generation to generation. What is the link? The link is simple. Why did Gemara introduce the topic of the charismatic, blessed, intuitive wisdom of the Jew in general unto the sugya concerned to this din and pshore? I believe I spoke about it quite a number of years ago, what pshore means in Jewish law. It is not like the arbitration, I mean, from the view, like the arbitration the way the common law understands. In the common law, arbitration is not a judicial act. It is a settlement out of court, basically. The judge recommends to the litigant, instead of appearing before him and accepting his judgment, should meet and settle the matter by themselves. According to Yehadus, to the Aloche, his pshore is maise pesdin. Of course, it requires kinyan before, but after the kinyan took place, had taken place, the kinyan sudar, is the shefet sits, the dayan sits on the case, and whatever he recommends has the power, the strength, and the validity of a judicial decision. Vayi dove deshi mishpat tzdoko lo kolame. So the Gemara asks, mishpat cannot be tzdoko, and tov cannot be mishpat. The Gemara says, David, you surrender din teiro, means simply, I mean, a verdict based exclusively upon the letter of the law, and at the same time render also the verdicts if the baladinim, if the litigants agree, based upon pshore. So pshore has the same value. Basically, pshore is also a din teire. The same validity. It's maise bezden. It is mishpat sheyesh betzdokot, the way the Gemara expresses ourselves. It's a combination of mishpat, of pure justice, and charity. But there is a very disturbing question about pshore. Din is rooted nowhere. In the din atel, I hope Mavlechesh Mishpat, and I try to find the din, and I render the din. All the dying doors with regard to din, is simply, he informs the people that that's the way the Chesh Mishpat looks upon their controversy. This is the way the Chesh Mishpat would resolve the controversy. He passes on information. The Maisi Bezdun consists in passing on information. The Adayin is basically an information officer. But when it comes to Pshore, upon what is Pshore? Upon what does Pshore rest? What is the foundation of Pshore? The Chesh Mishpat? No, it's nothing. If I copy the Chesh Mishpat, we tell them what the Chesh Mishpat thinks, or it is Din. So what is the source of Pshore? What is the source of it? Rapshoy? What is the source of authority, Rapshoy? Why is Pshoy valid? Dr. Feinberg, why is valid? If you listen, there is a controversy between money lender and one who borrowed the money, whether he paid up his debt or didn't pay up his debt. So a point of view means that he has to pay him, under certain circumstances. Or another, under other circumstances, I mean, on the contrary, he doesn't have to pay. Either the lender who wins the case, or the one who borrowed the money wins the case, and the lender loses the case. But I'm sure when the dying will feel that he shouldn't lose completely, then on the contrary, the other fellow should not win every penny, you say $50. You split it. And what is it based? Upon what? Upon the conscience of the dyer. Upon the sense of charity. Yes. Correct, of course, yes. Correct, yes. Badaskale, Kibadaskale, Ishpe. Yes. But the conscience of the dyer, his sense of fairness, and the sense of justice, I mean, determine the amount, the nature of the verdict, I'm sure. So the question is, how is it possible? How can Mishpat, rest upon the opinion of a human being who is frail and limited? So what is the answer? Apparently, Pshoro expresses Chochmas HaTorah in the same manner as Din Torah does. The conscience of the dying inspired is not by Torah knowledge. It is inspired by Torah wisdom, by the sense of fairness and justice, rises to the level of Mishpat. Of course, it expresses a human sense of charity, of justice. The Torah however, his human, his intuitive approach is an inspired approach. It is a blessed approach. It is a charismatic approach. And because the dying is sensitive and just and good and truthful, his opinion becomes endowed with the sanctity of a Din Torah. Upon what is it based? Upon the fact that the intuition of the Jew is an inspired one. It can be traced to sources in the Torah. That's why the Gemara quotes 6 or 7 adages which were coined by people from the crowd, which Shmuel traced to verses in the Bible to show us, to manifest to us, that the intuitive feeling of the Jew is a part of our Torah. Not only the precise opinion, but the sense of fairness and kindness and sympathy which Kadarin experiences vis-à-vis the paladin in both, is inspired, it's an inspired character. And it is equal in importance and in significance to the Din Torah. The remark was made, it's correct. The Kim Nitzel Badas Keil Bekerev and the Kim Yishpei, that God is present in the courthouse, in the Beis Din, whenever litigation is being decided and resolved, applies not only to the interior, but to Pshoah as well. So the Dayan who renders verdict on the basis of Shore represents God's will as the Dayan who renders it into the Torah. Now, let us just go one by one, the editors, and see what is involved in there. What's the first adage? Ahuda Bekoma Vodu, he walked around, he said to Dio, Bishama Vodish, Halfur Bishte, Meir, Omar Shmuel Rav Yehuda Kroksi, Beta Mayim Reish Smodin, Reish Meir Dine. There was a man who used to say, happy is the one who hears abuse of himself and ignores it. For 100 evils passing by. Samuel said to Rav Yehuda, this alludes to the verse, Beit HaMayim Reish Smodin. He will let us out of water of strife, or wherever, I mean, let strife spread, like a murder caught at the beginning of Madon. Exposes himself to 100 quarrels. So what do you say about it, about this adage? Just, I want you to analyze it in your mind. After all, if every Jew has inspired intuition, so you all have this intuition. So I'm waiting. Yes, sir. Yes, but this, the same maimor, the same adage, but in a different form, was expressed in the Gemara, not in the name of somebody unknown, of some anonymous person, but in the name of Rabbi Breit, the Moringi. No, Shmuel, I don't remember exactly. The same which traced back, which was traced back to Mishlei, the Proverbs, is to be found in another, in the Talmud, in another context. In Asheleach, in Gitz. And Nelovim Veinomelvim, correct. And Nelovim Veinomelvim, three. Shem Yechaposem Veinomishivim Aleyem. Akosu Veinom Veyeh Agos Ketzeis Hashemes Begorosei. Those who love him will be like the sun which goes forth in its might. Just a minute. So what's the difference, the way the Mama was formulated here in Sanhedrin and the way it was formulated in Gittin, Ashaleach, I believe, in Gittin, and the one that the Meirvim, Shemach Posa, and Mishiv, Allah, Posa, the Alayna, Posa, the Alayna, Kis Hashem, the Yagot, the Hashem, the Torah. The difference between the statement in Sanhedrin and that in Gittin consists in the following. In Gittin, our rabbis speak in terms of moral judgment, of an ethical virtue. The language is normative. One should take insult without returning, one should not respond to words of abuse. To ignore insult and not to respond to abuse is a great moral virtue. It's a moral norm. It's a part of Musar Yahadus. Not to engage in a quarrel and to be capable of tolerating insult without getting excited. Such behavior
Der Rambam says, is in Dittaki, was a humble past person. The Rambam is in day of slay, 2.3. The Gemara in Gittin speaks of a silent man as an ethical personality. As a friend of God, the Eavot, it says Hashem is Gemara. Why is he a friend of God? Why does he love God? If he doesn't respond to abuse, so he loves God. He's a friend of God. And the word is with regard to the relationship between man and God, is not something common. The Pasuk Avrom Eavim, with regard to Abraham, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Abraham was my friend. And also any man who can respond, who does not respond to abuse,
This is the Sifri on the one hand, the Native and the Gemara in Sete, at the end of the first period, yeah, is basically what is moral, whatever reflects we must say the Darkei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ways of God. The Rambam calls it the Gamus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the man tries, I mean, Tzad Yochel, to imitate God, to walk in his ways. And the Almighty circle is the miracles, is one of the attributes. But the Dorash, I believe, the Dorash Rav Akiva, if I'm not mistaken. Who is as mute as the Almighty is? Sheshemeach or posim in the nation. He hears always, he hears every day words of abuse. He does not respond. He does not punish immediately. So not to return abuse and to be silent and mute and to ignore it comes under work, under the last of it record. That's why it's an ethical moral, it's an ethical performance. It is moral left. And with that, the Gemara, that's why the one who does it, who is tolerant, doesn't get excited, and takes insult without returning it, is a friend of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because he does exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu practices. That's with what the Gemara in Gittin is simply concerned with our Halacha. What is morally good? According to the principles of morality, if one wants to walk in the way of which HaKadosh Baruch Hu works, so you must not answer any insult. How can that be achieved? I mean, it's a practical question which I does not belong into the text, but to just how do I achieve that? And we meet with such we meet with insults quite often, particularly upon him, rabbis. Well, I'm not joking, I'm serious about it. It's quite a very frequent experience. And of course, I mean, we have to follow, I mean, not advice, but the moral norm formulated by the Chachmei Talmud in Ashleach, in Gittin. One must be a member of the Eilei, Ashleach of Possible Innovation. How do you achieve that degree of humility? I don't know about it, humility, or it might also be prompted by a sense of not vanity, but by a sense of pride. Dignity, rather. Of course, the man has dignity that has not been taken before. But basically, this lecture is a look at the certain axiology, or what shall I say, in the approach. In the very approach as men to society or as men to fellow men. Of course, if public opinion reigns supreme and man is just out to find approval and grace in the eyes of his fellow man, if he has no independent system of values, he accepts the public opinion as something sacred, so then it could be very hard for him not to respond to insult. Because when he is insulted, he feels the whole world crumbled. Because the people he expected to honor, to respect him, humiliated him. And suddenly, he faces disaster. It's a traumatic experience as far as he's concerned. In order to be capable of that kind of humility, one must be capable to do what? To simply to retransvaluate all his values and simply say to himself, I don't need an approval by man. There's one person, or there's one being whose approval is important as far as I'm concerned, namely, the Almighty. If he approves of my being, of me carrying or wearing the crown of Imago Dei, is enough. What others say makes no difference. It is very hard for a rabbi to arrive at such a... But I can tell you, it would have been very healthy for us to come to such conclusions. And basically, as a matter of fact, Rav Amiel said it to one of his Shabbatul Rashes. Nana, he says, if one should ask him, where is the secret of Jewish survival? What made us survive? So I would answer, he writes, in Rosh Hashanah, that the secret of our survival is to be found in a short formula which a Jew says every Erev Pesach, twice, once at the night of Bikas Chometz, and the second time after he got rid of the Chometz. Kol Chamiro v'Chamiro dito v'Shusei, v'Chazite g'lo Chazite, l'iskul l'lev k'kaf v'darai, don't care a bit about all that. The Jew survived because he had actually the ability to simply to spell out his disregard for mankind, because of very difficult times. Now we live in a different society. But if one can imagine, the medieval society, the Jew held in contempt, prosecuted and pursued, particularly insulted, perfidious Jews, insulted, abused, and humiliated, looked upon and treated the subhuman, as belonging to subhuman species, how could he survive? The answer is, the Jew apparently did not look for approval of society or general society. He was just waiting for one man to approve of him, for one person to approve of him, this Almighty. As I said before, is concerned with the moral norm. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is not concerned with the moral norm, but with what is the moral Sanhedrin concerned. With the experience, God. Yes, with a practical. It is a practical nature. Not to answer abuse, not to return, is practically good. Not only morally, but practically as well. The quarrel must not be pursued. When Gittin contains
an halachic principle that one must not return abuse, should be capable of ignoring it, of rising above the low level of the one who abuses. Sometimes a heroic effort is required. In Gittnitz is a practical advice. If one does not pursue a quarrel with you, you finally in the end win. You'll be the winner. I've ignored many times. I went through, I mean, thick and thin, if you say, I think colloquially. As a rogue, now I'm not a rogue anymore, I'm an alarmist. But thank God. But as a rabbi, you went through, may I use that phrase, through hell, excuse me. I've never answered. I've never returned abuse. I always ignored. There is a certain silence which expresses dignity. And whether it complies with this norm, be dignified and therefore be silent, will win any quarrel, any debate, any strife, any conflict. Right? I try to interpret the two lines that Morris said are not in terms of Jewish homiletics. I'm pretty good at that, but what I did not use it. Simply the way I interpret a sugya which deals with a halachic problem. It's exactly. There are two sugyas. Question is, like the Baratesh asks a question, two sugyas which contradict each other. Why the duplication? The answer is what? One deals with aloche, a moral aloche. The other one deals with expediency, with a practical matter. It advises the Jew, to be silent and mute, and not to get excited when he meets his abuse. And as I told you before, our survival is due to the fact that we have practiced this much. This moral one. Now next. Again, there was a man who used to say, do not be surprised. Is it the second? Is it the second? If a thief goes unhanged for two or three thefts, he will be caught in the end. There is a Yiddish colloquial. Yiddish is Hebrew, but this was so damnably clear. Shmuel found it necessary to find a correlate in Tanakh to that adage. It's a false adage. What is the correlate in Tanakh to that adage, to that saying? God says the Lord, Ashesha Tishimeo, I Israel, Valabor Le Yashivenu, for three transgressions of Judah, but for the fourth one I will not reverse it. So first of all, what principle is the law of God? Again, the pasuk is interpreted in two ways. The Rambam says in the Reshuva, "Avol atzibu telin yehem ovin rishin sheni yishlishi sheneim arashlish apishe Yisrael v'alabor v'liyashenu." Ukshemechashvim lehem arder arzu, mechashvim lehem arzi v'erich. That if the community, if an individual commits a sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives the first, second time, but not the third time. If the community commits a sin, as a collective, as a separate entity, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives them three times. If they repeat the thing a fourth time, then he punishes the community. ich lese aus welcher Pische ist Israel, aus welcher Pische mehr, aus welcher Pische ist Israel, aber alle Jashe Vena. This refers to the community. And there is but with regard to the individual, I mean, two are forgiven, the third one is the, he punishes when the chet is repeated the third time. Right. Correct. The Ram says, V'sho sheshekel ha'venesas ho'odom, im sri yesos, im lachash v'in o meshfot ha'bitchimo, v'lai sheni, v'lai meshlishi v'elech. What is the idea for dealing the first, second sin, and not the third? As far as the Yochid is concerned, and forgiving the three sins, but not the fourth one, as far as the community is concerned, what's the idea? Why is it so? Why is it so? I mean, what, like, what is the conclusion you derive on it? I'm not asking why you should explain to me what motivated it, but I never asked this question. But what is the content? Apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, apparently now. Because Baruch Hu does not punish the person for committing his sin. He punishes his sinner. His sinner. The person who was corrupted by sin. There's a difference. I mean, as a matter of fact, you'll find in many penal codes that repetition of a crime, repetition, once, two repetitions, twice, three times, I mean, it will result in a very severe verdict of it. If I'm not mistaken, it's very characteristic of the French penal code, if I'm not mistaken. So how do in such a manner Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not punish for the commission of a sin, but the person who became polluted, corrupted by sin? So, in other words, how would you express it in halachic terms? In halachic, plain halachic terms. What? Mu'ed is the same as Rav Eshor. That's not a human being. No, you don't have to go so far. Abuna Shabbat. What will I always say? Mu'ed. What about Chazoke? Then once, how is the pattern of Chazoke set established? We have a machlokes, we have a controversy in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe. Rebbe's opinion is Chazoke is established a pattern of behavior, a behavioral pattern. A behavioral pattern is established by what? By just repeating the sin once. Praise him now, the Chazoke. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel thinks that we trust him now, the Chazoke. That if I repeat it, two times, I do it once, repeat it once. First time and the second time is the pattern of Chazoke established, and the Gavre is the Gavre is classified under that pattern of Chazoke. Correct? Yeah. The Psalm is interesting with regard to many problems. We accept it rebellion, you betray him now, the Chazoke. In reference to other problems, like for instance in Shir HaMoed, we require three times in order to establish a pattern of Chazoke, a pattern of behavior, so forth. Apparently, with regard to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with regard to sin, has employed the approach of Rebbe with regard to HaYochid, and the approach of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel with regard to the community. It's much easier for a Yochid to get corrupted by sin than it is for a community. That's why the Yochid is forgiven, the individual sinner is forgiven twice, while the Tzibur is forgiven three times. That's exactly how the Gemara Rosh Hashanah and the Rambam interpret the Pasuk of Shleishei Pishei Yisroel Rabo Le Yashivena. How does the Gemara in Gittin interpret it? אבל זה גמור את הרבר. איש עד כדי זה גמור ראש השונה. And the Rambam, I quote the Rambam, it's all right. Please, there is forgiveness for free, but not for four, as far as the community is concerned. There is forgiveness for two, and not for three, as far as an individual is concerned. How does the Gemara in Sanhedrin talk with the Pasuk? Our slave shall teach him mayor, while our poor lay Ashurana, just a moment. No, like a rhetorical question. Ashleisha pishe Yisrael? Valabore Ashrena? What do you want to derive from the fact that I have forgiven three times? That I will forgive a fourth time as well? This is wrong! That I will forgive Al-Mokhra, Al-Mikhra, Al-Bakes, Al-Dalim, Ve'evim, Ba'avur, Al-Oim? This is wrong! It's in the elliptical sentence according to the glory in Sanhedrin. It's a rhetorical question. Ashleisha pishe mayor? Balabor as well? Leah Shiveno? I would not reverse my method of forgiveness and grace and kindness? Then he'll sin a fourth time, I'll punish him. I would not bestow anymore. Any grace upon him anymore. So what is the principle in the Gemara in Sanhedrin? What principle is involved here? Otherwise Rabbi Shmuel wouldn't have traced it to the Bible. It's a practical advice to the Ganesh. Okay. If he stole three times and was successful, in his operation don't try a fourth time. Yeah, but more than that. This adage is very relevant to the hadith, because upon this adage is based the principle of the dogma of Scarway. Reward and punishment. The problem of wash of the table and Sadiq Rore has prepared the greatest of our people, the ninth, the greatest of our people. Hazal in Broche say that the first one who raised this question is upon his mother. He was Meshur Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu not Rosecho. David asked, Chavakuta. Why did the righteous suffer and the wicked lead a comfortable life? Many, many great men drifted because of that. So sometimes the punishment and the reward are slow in coming. We the Jews say, Yafotishi Yafeshi Ismamea, with regard to the Melech HaMashiach, Bechodei HaChakali, Bechodei HaShiyove. In spite of the fact that he's very slow, I do believe that you're right. We say it not only with regard to the Melech HaMashiach, also with regard to Schar Ve'enet. Yafotishi Ismamu Baderech. They are slow to come, sometimes very slow. The reward is one of the punishment, but still we have faith. The Gemara tells us about the tragedy of Elisha ben Avuya Acher, who was caused by this problem. Why? There are two reasons in the Gemara. For his departure from the Masera community, for his apostasy. But in both cases, what perturbed him? Why was he perplexed? Why was he confused? Because since Atreya class Gangeli Mitkil, if twice or three times the Almighty has forgiven, so he supposed that the Almighty will not punish anymore. Or Shlesha Pish Yisrael, and hence, even Abo Velei Ashivena, I would not reverse it. This was actually the cause the factor which precipitated his departure and his betrayal of the Chachmei Maaseret. And that's so when this anonymous person walked around in Yardoni and kept on saying, at 3 o'clock down in the Mifti, but don't deduce from it that the fourth time will not be caught and hanged. So Shmuel said, cruel, it's a person. It's not just a person. It is the foundation of Yaharut. Without Chav Einish, you have no Yaharut. The fact that Chav Einish are flowing coming, don't contradict our faith and our belief that at some date in the future, a distant future or in the near future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will punish the guilty ones and will reward the righteous ones. What is quite interesting in this context is the following. The Haftira, beginning of Achrei Shopi Shemei Aval Abu Alei HaShavena, the Haftira which is quoted in the Gemara Sanhedrin by Shmuel, we read on Shabbat Vayeshev. If Vayeshev is not Shabbat Hanukkah, of course. What is the connection or the link between the Mechirat Yeshev, which is recorded in Vayeshev, and the chapter, the prophet, the chapter in Micah, on Shlesha Pishi Yisroel Rabu Alei Yashvah. What is the link? Yes? Go ahead. The first answer is that the link is the prophet, Amichon Bakeses Darim Verim Babu Nawain, for selling the righteous for silver and the poor one for a pair of shoes. The fact that Yeshiv was sold, but this is just a parenthetical remark, for a pair of shoes, is mentioned in Michal. The Evian Bavur Naloi found is reflected or found its expression in where? In a certain tefillah, we say. Asura Rudi Malchus, Yom Kippur. Mile Tlotereine Neolim. When the evil king announced sentence of death against the Ten Chachmei Yisroel, so he filled up his palace with shoes as the symbol of the cry of the Chirat Yeshiv. Yes. I believe there is another reason as well. When the brothers sold to Joseph, they thought that no one will ever know about it. No one will ever know about it. They prepared to say a perfect plan of hiding a crime. Joseph, they thought, will either not survive or you'll get assimilated and you'll forget completely about his father's home. Jacob will be led to believe that his son was devoured by a predatory animal. Then years passed, more than 20 years passed, at least 23, I believe. First, the people forgot Joseph. Everybody forgot him. The whole tragedy of Jacob sank into complete oblivion. No one talked about it. Probably the exception of Jacob. Who could anticipate? Who could believe that on their journey to a strange land, a strange country, Egypt,